This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
The five Democratic candidates for three open seats on the Charlottesville City Council held their first public event on Thursday, May 10th, in the cafeteria at Walker Upper Elementary School. The candidates are Jennifer McKeever, an attorney and community activist, Satyendra Hooja, the former director of strategic planning in Charlottesville, Mayor David Brown, who's been on council since 2004, Holly Edwards, the program director for the Public Housing Association of Residents, and former chair of the school board, Linda Seaman. This first public forum was split into two events. First, each candidate met with small groups to find out what was on their minds. Second, the candidates answered questions from the audience. Current city councilor Kendra Hamilton served as moderator for this portion of the forum.
Okay, so we have one mic, so I'm going to try and, you know, but it's better to get closer so that if people just want to interject comments that everybody can hear. But what I want to start, I want to thank everyone for coming out, first of all. I think that for our first council forum, you know, this is a great turnout. And you guys should be congratulated because, you know, for coming out. Because, you know, everybody could be home watching Ugly Betty, you know, or with your children. So what I want to do is start by asking the candidates to go around and just take a few minutes to, you know, tell us you've been meeting with the public, you've been, you know, absorbing people's concerns. What do you think is the most important question that you got tonight, and how would you address it? And I'm going to start on this end.
Kevin's going to keep time.
Okay. Well, two things which I hear most are dealing with traffic and congestion, and then I hear about the taxes. So for the traffic, we're not going to be building too many roads, to my knowledge. And I know there is an article in the newspaper today, One for One. We've been talking about that for 40 years. So I think the solution for the traffic problem is not more roads or more cars, but a better transit system. I'll suggest a free and frequent transit system every 15 minutes. If it is reliable, if it is efficient, if it is frequent and reliable, it could be done very well. As you may know, that only we get about $400,000 to $500,000 from the fare box, which is 1 cent on our tax rate. The question is, what do you value in your values? If you can have a good transit system, you'll ride, deal with congestion problems, you'll deal with energy problems, deal with environmental problems, and maybe you'll meet some good people on the bus. At least I always meet them. So that's the first thing which I hear a great deal about. Second thing I hear about is taxes. And taxes are here to stay, I'm sure. But question is how much they can be. And I think just because the assessments go up, which is natural, we need to sort of compensate for in tax reduction. And if we can't do, and I think some raises are needed for the city to operate, but there could be more in the range of 5 to 6% instead of 12 to 14%. So that, and one of the things which I realize that there are many people in this community on fixed income and low income who can't afford to pay their taxes. One of the suggestions which I, a few months back, talked to Kevin, and I think he had been pushing it for the last, it didn't get through, was we ought to have a deferred tax for people who can't on fixed income so they can pay the taxes when the house is sold instead of right now. So they can live their quality of life, and at the same time, city will get the money back when the property is sold with interest. So it is a win-win situation for both sides.
Well, thank you for organizing this. This has been really, really great. The two things that I have heard tonight specifically that I thought was very important, one is my favorite question so far was, what is the most pressing need of our city? Thank you for asking that question. And I didn't really get a chance to answer it because it was at the end of the question session. So I will, at this point, I want to keep people at this point, I will answer that question, which is I want to keep people here. The affordability of the city is critical, and I want to make sure that we're promoting policies that keep this city affordable and make it more affordable for folks. That's one of my main goals as a councilor, is to promote policies that promote affordability. So the second issue that I have talked about a lot is now escaping me. But what who just said was about transportation, that was key. Okay. Okay. Thank you for that good segue into leadership.
We don't have to spend all the money we have, same way we don't have to spend all the time we have. We can save it for future.
Thank you. So you always think of something went later that you wanted to say. But I think one of the other good comments that we had is about being leaders in our community. As a city council, we really need to use the pulpit that we have to lead and be proactive in our leadership. So that includes with the university and with the county. And I think there is a perception, and along with perceptions, there's some degree of reality that the city is being reactive to the county and the university. And my goal would be to be a leader and be proactive in that. So those are the two things that I wanted to say.
Thank you. The one area of questions that I thought was really important had to do with the connection between jobs and good jobs and being able to afford to live in the community. I mean, all these things are interrelated. But I think that, one of the things we have to do a better job of is making sure that all our citizens, especially our kids who are in school and finishing school, receive the skills necessary, both the technical part of the skills and the sort of social skills to succeed in the workforce. That our kids, especially in school, have to have a vision of the future that motivates them to pay attention in school and to stay in school and to feel like there's a future there that holds some promise for them. I think that, unfortunately, not only on this issue, but on a lot of issues, we're being left with the responsibility that we used to share. We used to have federal funding for job training programs. We used to have other resources that would help us in that task that don't exist anymore. That issue connects into the transit issue. I think that, transit, and I think it's, and one of the real positives and things I think is hopeful is expanding transit. I think that, I think Hooja's goal of 15-minute headways and no fares is a great goal. I'm not quite sure how it fits with the plan to lower taxes at the same time, but that's another discussion. But I think that's one area where the county is interested in expanding transit. I think we have a good chance to create a regional transit authority that would mean that there's just more places you can go without a car. You can go more frequently, and that's important because it not only means do we use less energy, is it more convenient, less traffic, but it means that our people that live in Charlottesville can get to jobs more easily and reliably. This year we're instituting Sunday service, for example, on some of our routes, which we should eventually have on all of our routes, to allow people to get to jobs and get to shopping. I think that I think Jennifer framed it kind of accurately. We don't want to be responsive to the city and the county, but I think what we want to do is just find ways to work together and create win-win kind of environments. And Kevin's smiling, so I'll finish now.
The issues I heard tonight were, as David has said, to some extent, interrelated issues. And they are interrelated because economic development, jobs, education, and the affordability of this region are all interlocking issues. we do need to collaborate with our neighbors, both Albemarle County that surrounds us and in the other counties in the planning district to look at the issue of jobs. In the last 6 or 7 years, we have lost most of the manufacturing jobs here. They've been replaced by service sector jobs, and they are much lower wage jobs that have fewer opportunities for climbing up the success ladder. So as we talk about economic development in the city, I think we need to encourage the entrepreneurial sector, and that's alive and well in this community, and to grow small businesses, which have historically been the backbone of the economy here. I think at this point in time, the Chamber of Commerce is something like 70 or 80% of the businesses that are members are small businesses, and that means businesses that have employees well under 50 in number. So I would say that the whole issue of economic development as it relates to jobs that allow people to earn good wages and grow in their careers so that they can afford housing are all interrelated. And closely related is the issue of education. Our young people in our schools need to be well prepared for jobs. They need to have the academic skills and the work readiness skills that will bring them success as they go out to work. So I would say that the issues that I've heard tonight are quite interrelated, that we have to continue to work to get our education system up to snuff so that we have students coming out who can work here because they have the skills and that because they're the jobs that provide them with the opportunities to stay here and to grow here.
I heard about environment, housing, taxes, budget, development, redevelopment, Meadow Creek Parkway, why, education, living wage, neighborhoods, children, transportation, health, and sustainability. But what I listened to was the quality of life and the concerns that people have about being a part of how decisions are made. And what I encouraged people to do was to go to city council meetings, go to the planning commission meetings, learn about zoning, learn as much as you can about what's going on, and share that information with your neighbors and connect with other neighbors. The other thing I heard was follow the money. I heard a lot of people talking about the budget and taxes, and I gave the example of we have given, we have given the school the money that they requested for their budget. Now's the opportunity to follow the money and to have the resources and the services in our school system become accountable for that money line. This is a good opportunity to have some involvement with that accountability. So of all the things that I heard, what I listened to was quality of life and where is the money really being spent.
Thank you. I'm going to let Jennifer answer the next question first. We're going to rotate who goes first down the line. So, and I'm going to start with this one because I think that this is an example of the kind of issue that one deals with a lot in city council. The first two questions, one is very sort of like down-home neighborhood and one is very broad. So, first question, some of our residents woke up about two weeks ago to find a sign put up from the city informing them that they could not park in front of their homes between the hours of 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. This was done without informing the residents in their neighborhood. Question is, when you are elected to council, what will you do to ensure that this kind of thing does not happen?
That would drive me crazy. I'm so sorry that happened. We've actually had a couple of things like that. I've been to a lot of council meetings lately, and people are very upset about their bus routes being cut, quite overnight feeling. So this is, I think, this problem of the parking extends to many other areas, unfortunately. So we clearly have a communication gap, whether the gap is between staff and council or the city and their residents, it doesn't matter. As the leaders, I'm accountable. If I'm elected, I will be accountable. You can call me, my number's in the phone book, and I want to hear about it. Because one of the most important things that my my campaign is about transparency. These actions should be, you should know about them way ahead of time. This is not an overnight decision. It shouldn't happen overnight. So making things that happen in our city hall transparent and obvious to people. And that doesn't mean just to those who come to city council meetings, because now I know a lot more, but I want to bring that to people who don't come to city council meetings, because their opinions matter just as much as those who come. So transparency is critical to me, and that is the kind of thing that drives me crazy, drives my neighbors crazy, and it's unfortunate, and there would be somebody accountable in City Hall. And, of course, y'all could come to me, but I would be going to somebody else, and I would make sure that they know this is not they would hopefully tell me that there had been a process, and then I could respond to the citizen that way, but I'm not going to just stop there. I'm going to say the process has to be improved, and I have to understand the reasons. I will demand answers.
Well, I got a call at 5 o'clock today on this very issue. Thank you, Joy. I think that I mean this has been a big issue the last several years on you know, communication is something the city has not done a great job on and needs to improve. I actually think we are improving. The problem is it's harder to see the areas where you improve with communication because nobody complains, but it's easy to see the times when you aren't improved because there's a problem again. I think it's certainly, I know it's something that all of council values, is making sure people not only know something is going to happen, but there's frequent contact. One area we have gotten in trouble with is where the city's done a decent job sometimes of meeting with the neighborhood, talking about an issue, but then the process of implementing the change takes a while, and by the time the process comes to fruition and the change is made, there's a whole new set of neighbors living in the neighborhood, and now there's a bunch of people say, well, we didn't know. Well, it's because the neighborhood's changed. So it's the outreach to the neighborhood can't be a static process. It has to be an ongoing process. It's something I think as councils, you know, we have to be vigilant on. I do think that a key role of a city councilor is to be the interface between the public and the city staff, you know, because, you know, we all have jobs. We all work, you know, 30 hours a week doing something else, 40 hours a week doing something else. But I think one of our real key roles, and it's one we should make sure people know, is that we're who people can contact and that we can advocate for people. We can, look into problems. Hopefully, if there's a structural problem that a department or a person or a part of the city is just not getting the message out. I also agree, you know, I think that openness in government is a really good thing, and I think it actually is an area in which we've improved. For example, we start our city council meetings a little earlier. We have more information available online or on CD or in the library on our budget than any other locality does. We not only televise our meetings and our planning commission meetings, we rebroadcast them, which we didn't used to do. We have them on the internet. You can go look at our meetings anytime you want to. I think there's a lot of ways in which we've tried to get a process where more people can see what we're doing and why we're doing it. One thing we've done on council I'm going to keep talking until Kevin comes up and pushes me. But one of the things we've done on council the last couple of years is we've had a lot more work sessions. And I think that's very important because it's not just at the council meeting that decisions are made, but it's people need to be able to see the process where we really talk through what we think about a parks issue or an arts issue or affordable housing issues.
If the citizen calls, I will answer, number one. It is important for all of us as city councilors, and I like Holly, I'm saying us, that citizen know that there's going to be some answer to what's going on very, very soon. The first thing I would do on the one-to-one basis is call the person who would be most likely in charge in the city and get an answer and get back to the citizen. But that is solves the small problem. The larger problem is one of communication and accountability between city government and the neighborhoods and our individual citizens. One thing I have heard as I have talked to people in this community, and I've heard it a great deal, is concerns about neighborhood development services and the communication they have with the citizens in this city and their accountability to the citizens, that things happen that don't get discussed with neighborhood associations, or when they do get discussed, something else seems to happen. So I would say that as a city councilor, I would like to hold our city manager accountable for some of the departments in city government that may be in a situation where they are not communicating and providing good customer service to our citizens.
I would use the same approach that I'm most familiar with in terms of providing nursing care, and using the acronym PI, Problem, Intervention, and Evaluation. It's just that simple. The determination of what the problems are, whether they're communication, glitches, or however it came up, but do an assessment of the problem. Figure out what the intervention is going to be. And then most importantly, do the evaluation to make sure that the problem has been solved.
I think situation like this, first of all, this is a basic rule. We need to treat people the way we like to be treated ourselves. If somebody was to show up and with a bulldozer in front of my house, I'll tell them, what the hell are you doing there? You know? And there have to be some way to communicate and discuss. It means there is some breakdown of communication and not due respect given to people who live there, whose life you're going to affect. If you're going to affect people's life, you need to talk to them, share with them, and if you have not done that, somebody needs to be accountable and somebody needs to get a tongue lashing, at least, if nothing more. And if they don't, if they keep on doing it more than once, they need to be gotten rid of or something. So I think communication is important, and it's not only important, as somebody said, at one time it is important on an ongoing basis so that when people know what is going on. Nobody likes surprise. None of us like surprise, unless it is a winning a lottery or something like that. I could take that kind of surprise, but not too. So we need to have continuous communication. We need to have accountability. We need to make sure that we treat people like we would like to be treated ourselves.
Okay, next question. And this is something that's going to be coming up, guys. So the Ravenna River Water and Sewer Authority. Of course, you remember all the concerns that we had about our water supply several years ago. So Ravenna is considering expanding our water reserves by building a dam at the Ragged Mountain Reservoir. This would raise the water level by 40 feet and take by flooding 138 acres of land. This land is owned by the city. So the question is, as a councilor, what would you require as compensation?
Well, I think that's a good question. And I think, you know, there's value in that land now. It's not just the land just sitting there, but people obviously hike and enjoy that land. And I think there's a couple different ways we could receive compensation on that. We could receive compensation in terms of creating some other natural type land that would be accessible to our citizens, either within city limits or in the area. The second way we could be compensated would be to get financial compensation that would allow us to either purchase easements or do cleaning up of the waterways that are within the city. And, you know, Kevin Lynch, I think, has been a big proponent of this idea, which is to try to, see if the value we have in the property at Ragged Mountain could be used to either clean up, you know, Moores Creek, clean up the Ravanna River within the city, clean up Meadow Creek, you know, or buy easements to protect it, or, you know, create trails so people can enjoy these natural waterways.
The land that's being lost at, or potentially being lost at Ragged Mountain, is land that is used and is managed, I believe, through the Ivy Creek Natural Area, and it has trails on it, and so it is available for public enjoyment. First of all, we're not making more land. What we've got is all we're going to get. And so for it has to be preserved. I would propose that the land that was being taken for increasing the reservoir, that the city and the county work together, since that's what the Ravanna Water and Sewer Authority does, is the city and the county work together, and we set aside a very substantial piece of property on the south side of Charlottesville to build a city-county park, a park of significant dimensions so that we would have multiple uses available in that area, and it could be dedicated to public use in perpetuity. This kind of a park, I would think, should be as large as Penn, probably Penn and Tau together, so that it could have ball fields, it could have forested areas for trails, it could provide many types of recreation for all of the citizens in the city and the county and the whole region. The south side of the city and that area of the county has very limited parks. Azalea is the one that's down on the most southern part in Fry Springs area. It's a smaller, older park. I think it's time that we have a large, multi-jurisdictional park on the south side. And I would say that we should enter into negotiation as soon as possible with the county before that land gets developed, because there are some large developments slated for that area right now.
I guess in all honesty, before I could answer the question, I would want to learn more about what the other options are, because that space can never really be replaced. And so I'd really want to learn more about what those options are and what they would actually look like. Because once we take away that natural resource, there's never any way of coming back. So I guess my best answer would be to, I'd like to explore the answers that I hear up here to see if they would fit my desire to make sure that there's enough green space available for when my daughters, who are a year and a half, grow up, will still have a playground and play space to play in.
As Linda said, we're not making more land. We are losing a lot of it, but we're not making more. And I would think that you'd want to at least replace equal amount of land in open space, but not any kind of local open space, but space which is located in a way that benefits our citizens near city or within the city if possible. For example, there is a whole floodplain in the Ravanna River where the circus used to be. Maybe we can trade for that. We require some land where we can protect the floodplain area, as well as have, so I would think that some space, open space, which is good, located so that it is easily accessible for our citizens. That is one thing which I would think you would want to do that. And second, I would object to some money also to use cleanup.
Thank you. That's a really great question, and all of these are great answers. I think we have a lot of research and options available to us, and I'm open to exploring all of those. I think there's a couple of issues, but specifically I'll talk about green space because this is a particular passion of mine. Just like Holly, I have a 2- and 3-year-old sons, and they're going to be wanting to use the green space that we currently have in our city for a very long time. And I'm very concerned about how easy it is to pave over or flood this land. My goal is looking to the future is to make sure that we continue to have the vision of green space in our city, because it's incredibly important for our children and the future. Moreover, I think there's a lot of issues happening at the Ravana water and sewer place. And that we need to be slightly more aware of, and we just need to, as a city and as a council in particular, we need to be more aware of. We just have to have the vision for the authority. And right now, my understanding is that there's no counselor on the authority. I want to see a counselor on that authority, because we have a lot of money invested in that authority. We need to make sure we're getting return on our investment, and that includes Meadow Creek Interceptor and a lot of issues. The perfect storm, I think, is what it's described as, that are coming down the pipe in the water and sewer world. So I think we need to address those as well.
I know that in some ways people who've been in public life for a while have a much better platform from which to address those kinds of questions. But, you know, you guys did great. So I want everyone to have the opportunity to answer one question first. So I'm going to do two more, even though I have more questions. But you guys have been really patient, and you know the night is getting late. So Linda, the question that you're going to get the opportunity to answer first is: someone asked about, please give us your views on building heights for the downtown mall, and I would also say, by extension, in the corridors.
As a city, we are probably in a situation where, in order to grow, we're going to have to become more dense. And with increased density comes the possibility of losing the character of our city. And this is a very special city, and I think all are very comfortable with the idea of it looking and feeling like a smaller city than perhaps it's growing to be. There was a recent recommendation, I think, that's going to go to council, that at least the building heights on the downtown mall be somewhat stepped back, so you don't have that canyon feel along the mall. And I truly support those recommendations, and having higher buildings allowed on some of the side streets. But we are going to have to increase density in this city. I think that's inevitable. And so I would support the recommendations that's been made by the study group most recently.
I know that question came out of the quality of life concern that the gentleman had about changing the character and the feel of the businesses and the people that choose to live within the downtown mall. And so I would agree that and it goes back to, as people have concerns like that, to be a part of going to city council, going to the planning commission meetings, and letting your concerns be made known, so that as those decisions evolve, you're not reacting to a process that's already taken place, but you're a part of that entire process.
Charlottesville is existing community. Well, think of building in existing communities versus building in, like, say, for example, counties. You can think of the analogy of quilt versus bedspread. We have a quilt, a very active quilt. Any piece we fit into that quilt is to match. The pieces need to match and complement what we have, instead of just adding. We don't have bedspread like county has, with thousands of acres of land. So everything which we do needs to fit into the fabric of what we have. And as to the height, and I think it'll be undesirable to have nine-story buildings on one after the other, but I can see that you can have a very high density without having nine stories. You can easily have high density by five, six, seven stories. And I think some of the ideas which have been presented, stepping back, I think that will also help. But I think you can achieve density without having nine-story buildings in downtown.
I agree that there is a density issue. I think we do need to have more density, not necessarily downtown, but within our commercial corridors. And they don't have to be nine stories. I don't think they should be nine stories. But creative redevelopment is something that I definitely promote. I think the city has a really good, and the Planning Commission all have an opportunity to play a part in the redevelopment of these areas. And again, I want to echo what Holly said about making sure that people understand what's happening. I think that's just our role as a city council and as a planning commissioners as well. So with respect to building heights, I agree that the nine story is not good in terms of the canyon effect on the downtown mall, but I also agree that there's a canyon effect on Water Street if you have nine stories behind the mall. So we need to really be thinking in towards the future and how we want these cities to streets to look like and what we can do to promote the economic vitality that is the downtown mall.
I think a lot of the challenging issues for the city arise from it being economical to build things in ways and in places that we didn't really think we'd build. And so on the one hand, we have people building on slopes, steep slopes and wooded areas that we never thought we'd ever see a house on, but now it's affordable to do. People can make money building there, and that presents a set of challenges. At the same time, I think, you know, we've had, tall buildings have been allowed on the downtown mall for a long time. But no one really looked into building. You know, the economics weren't there where people seriously looked about building these kind of dense, big buildings. But now people are. And I think we all have some concerns saying, well, you know, no one would plan to build all nine-story buildings, but one at a time, people could see it in their financial interest to do so. So I'm really glad we got together a committee of a couple of BAR members, a couple of planning commissioners, some other people some other smart people basically, and really looked at coming up with some recommendations that lowered the height allowed on the downtown mall. It will allow it to be as high as it's allowed now by special use permit, but it'll generally decrease the height. Equally importantly, it's a step back, and what they used for the step back was the sun angle. So the idea of making sure that the mall won't be shaded. Because I think that the mall has a great scale. You know, it feels appropriate when you walk on it, and I think we can envision a future where it would be too tall. I think, people have made some other good points. It's not just the downtown mall that we need to think about. We need to think about this kind of, making sure that we have appropriate development other places. I agree with what everyone here said, which is density is going to come. It's almost like, in my mind, we have a responsibility to become denser. You know, it is energy efficient for people to live urbanly as opposed to living in sprawl. And in order for that to occur, we have to be smart about it. The upside of the density occurring is that transit becomes more workable when there's more density. You know, when there's more people who live close together, more people can ride the buses. The buses become fuller. We can then have more buses going more places. So there's, density can have some benefits, but density done poorly doesn't have any benefits.
Thank you. And last question. Please tell us what you see as the primary health concerns of people in Charlottesville, especially with most vulnerable residents, and do you have any solutions?
I think that the health concern that I see that has evolved across a variety of spectrum is if we could address obesity, that would solve a lot of the other health care issues that fall in line with that. And addressing obesity could mean anything from making sure our children always continue to have the healthy meals and snacks available for the children, and continue to make sure that we had the free lunch program to make sure all those things were in place. And that in terms of the city, being able to have a city that we're able to walk through and bike through, and to have a city that creates health as part of the culture. And I think I said it at as many tables as I could get to, that when there was a health fair at Carver, I wanted to run in and do everybody's blood pressure, to incorporate health as part of the culture and part of the conversation, because unless we're talking about it more and bring more awareness, then we can bring more action to some of the decisions that are made. Even with thinking about the kind of snacks that are in the vending machines around the city, do we need to make more responsible choices about what's available?
If you don't have health, everything else is irrelevant. So we can design cities which promote health. And it is not a rocket science. It has been done many places. And as somebody mentioned, for example, I would focus on more on preventive care and early screening more than anything else, because I think, for example, right now there are co-payments required for preventive care. It makes it ridiculous that you don't pay for preventive care, then you pay thousands of dollars afterwards to take care of it. If you can help the children and adults through preventive care and through education as to how to maintain good health, that is a better investment of funds. Then again, a continuous sidewalk on each side of the street, at least one side of the street in every neighborhood, could give you walking options, riding options, and exercise options. And walking is probably the best exercise there is in many ways. It is less stressful to your bone structure. And it is, I think, my focus will be on preventive and providing up. My 30 seconds still there? Okay. I know this is what I'm going to say probably may irritate some people, that I have seen cities, we have recreation centers in the city of Charlottesville. I don't see any reason why there should not be public gyms, where you can go to gym and have free or very modest. Gyms should not only be for the rich people. All ought to have some access to those kind of facilities. And we do have recreation centers which could provide some spaces for exercise. So I think I'm getting into private sector, but I think there's nothing wrong with it. I've seen other places in this country.
All of these are really great ideas and there's a very thought-provoking question. And what role city council plays in all of that, I think we can have a fantastic, substantial role. I'm a lawyer, and I worked at Legal Aid for a long time, so I see and I have seen the health problems in our city, and that is access to quality health care. And that means that in the middle of the night, you don't have to go to the emergency room and wait for 10 hours. And I feel and the morass that is trying to get assistance for your medical bills at the university. I have tried to do that back in the day, and it was really hard work. And I want people to have a facilitated, easier process for doing that, because these are barriers. Every time you step into a hospital and you have to fill out all of those forms, and let me tell you, I'm a lawyer, I like forms, but these are complex, difficult forms to fill out. And I feel like these are all barriers to getting the care that our residents and our most vulnerable residents really need. So access to the drugs that they need regularly, so they don't have to make these decisions at the end of the month whether to buy food or buy drugs for their children. These are decisions I can't imagine having to make, and I do not want anybody in our city to have to make this decision. So I think that's one of the major health crises. crises in our city, providing access to quality health care for all of our residents, and facilitating the process of alleviating the debt
of medical bills. Because, you know, both of the hospitals in this community do have indigent care programs, or at least UVA does. And I want to make that better and more accessible for folks.
I do think there's two paths on this. One path that Jennifer described is the medical care. Make sure people have access. I think the good part that we have, not just for low income, but for middle income. There's a lot of people who are underinsured or uninsured. And then there's the other side, which is more just the problems that our people are being developed: obesity, diabetes, smoking-related disease, just generally not having good nutrition. And I would hope that as a city we can become a leader in. Is this working?
Okay, here it is.
Okay, but
I think the battery's died in it.
I think we can hopefully become a leader in innovative ways of helping our citizens, especially our youth, be healthy. I think we have some exciting things going with our eat local programs, with community gardening ideas expanding, ways in which kids can learn about good nutrition because they get to experience it firsthand. They get to kind of see for themselves, where food comes from. It's not necessarily something that has to be unwrapped before you eat it. I think that there's also ways of just encouraging good behavior. Dr. Gerson, the dean of the medical school, is now, I guess, the provost at UVA. He came up with an idea in the cafeteria, is color-coding food. So everything that had a green label was healthy. Everything had a yellow label. You didn't want to have too much of it. And the stuff that had a red label, you wanted to stay away from. And it was pretty educational because I walked through the line and I said, how come what I want has a red on it? And so I think there's ways of just making sure people are educated. Kind of getting off track. It's getting late. Today the New York Times had a fascinating article I read on how, on the psychology of overconsumption, of why we eat too much. And it talked about how the study gave people stale popcorn, and if they gave it for free in a movie, and if they gave it to them in a large tub instead of a small tub, they ate a lot more. And so the size of the container, and they've done the same thing with plates of food, with glasses, with dishes. The bigger the container you're served with, the more you're going to eat. It's that simple. Well, that's knowledge that we can put to good use if people understand that. It's not just, you can't depend on your appetite to tell you what's good. I'll get back on track. I just thought it was really interesting. I wanted to share it with you guys. The other thing is, I think that the activity level, I think we've made some strides to try to make youth sports more accessible to kids. I think we need to continue to do that constantly. I think we need to make sure all kids can participate in basketball and soccer and lots of sports. I think we need to, personally, at the moment, I think we need to not only keep the neighborhood model for our rec center, but we just need to improve. I think that centralizing recreation is not necessarily going to be the way to keep the bulk of our city healthy. I think having it convenient to people is what's going to help them. And I think we need to continue to expand trails, bicycling, walking opportunities, things like that.
Thank you. I think one of the issues that I think is most important about health care in this community is to have jobs with benefits so that people have health insurance so that they can afford to go to the doctor when they need to go. So that would be the first line of defense, is to providing jobs that do help health care as part of their benefit package. Too many of our jobs today do not have benefits that go along with them. As a city, I think we need to promote healthy practices in many of the ways that have been mentioned already. Certainly we need to promote bike and walking trails. I would hope that we would make this a city that was walker friendly, so that we had sidewalks on the side of at least one side of every street in this city, because it is very, very hard to be a safe pedestrian in this place. Further, I think that as we look at our schools, it's important to promote physical education programs and opportunities within our schools for our children to have exercise as part of their daily lives. And certainly, we need to look at having adequate parks, well organized, so that everyone in the city has access and can walk to a neighborhood park of some kind to get that type of exercise. Having fitness trails is also another good way for citizens to have access to that kind of exercise. But it's getting late, and I think you've all heard that. Probably the best health practice is to go home and go to bed.
Ladies and gentlemen. Oh, sorry. What am I doing? It doesn't work. Please give our candidates a hand.
The candidates will speak at several other public events before a nominating caucus on June 2nd. That will be held at 12:30 p.m. at the Charlottesville Performing Arts Center. Stay tuned to Charlottesville tomorrow to see how this round of the election unfolds. Our election watch page has all the important details at civiltomorrow.org.